Right now on Travel with Rick Steves, we're visiting with Lisa Napoli, who spent a lot of time in a country that very few outsiders have visited, the Himalayan Kingdom of Bhutan. Her book is Radio Shangri-La, What I Discovered on My Accidental Journey to the Happiest Kingdom on Earth. We're learning about what happens when an extremely isolated culture begins to open up to the modern world. And what is really striking is how remote this kingdom is. I mean, Bhutan, what is their annual average income is $1,500 a year or something like that. And there's well under a million people in the kingdom. And just in the last decade, it's been opening up, or the last generation been opening up to the rest of the world. What was your take on the naivety or the savviness of the younger generation in such a, you know, kind of relatively repressed and isolated state?
It was both. It was both naive and both very savvy, as you say. They're sandwiched between China and India. And what's so interesting is little bits of those cultures seep into Bhutan. Lots seeps in over television and the movies. People there are extremely sophisticated TV and moviegoers. But as I write in my book, I have a visit from a Bhutanese woman who comes to the United States, and I get to see the United States through her vantage point. Mm. It's a big, big part of the back half of the book.
I love that section, America 101, and talking about this Bhutanese friend's first impressions of America.
And it's alarming, too, because you hear or you've read that immigrants or would-be immigrants are dazzled by the U.S. and think that we're all fantastically wealthy and, you know, drive limousines and hang out at the beach all day, go to the shopping mall. But of course, it's alarming when you meet a young person who thinks that that's true and then comes here and, and is shocked that we don't live that way, that this is not the place that they imagined it to be. So it really puts a fine point on the Hollywoodification or Hollywoodization of our world, as much as, you know, we have this mythic feeling about what Bhutan is going to be.
Is there a homegrown music industry in this tiny little country of 700,000 people?
Well, that's a great point. You know, as everybody in the world has had the sort of power of the computer put in their hands, Bhutan has too. And even in just the past 5 years since I first started going to Bhutan, people have become very sophisticated generators of content as well as passionate consumers of it. More and more kids are going out of the country to study journalism and filmmaking or getting their hands on computers, and out of the country meaning even as close as India right next door, getting their hand on computers and making movies and recording bands. And that's really interesting. There's this burgeoning culture there that we know very little about. There are only a couple of movie theaters in the whole country, so there aren't enough places to screen Bhutanese-made movies or hear Bhutanese music live. And there's lots of it being generated. So I'm hopeful that somewhere along the way, there'll be a repository for it, because it's as interesting as Bollywood. It sort of borrows from Bollywood, and it's fusion culture at its finest. It's fascinating. And there's some great documentaries that have come out of there, too, that are made by Bhutanese. And I can only imagine that they'll get better and better as time goes on.
Lisa, I can't help but try to splice that all into the sort of Buddhist frame of mind. And it must be a very interesting thing when you see the modern world coming in, when you see you there doing your work, when you see tourism, when you see a poverty-stricken nation and a king that wants to manage the modernization. And then they've got this Buddhist notion that everything you need is right there within you. How does that all come together? I mean, what is your take on that from a first world observer?
Well, you know, people are human. And when they see shiny things, they want them. And when they see what they perceive to be a better way of life, they want it. You know, it's great if you have that centering belief system that everything you need is inside you. But it's also very difficult to combat the menacing forces of the outside world, either in the form of TV or tourists. So I think we have so much that we can learn from a place like Bhutan, and Bhutan is learning a lot from us that we may not want it to know. But what's important is that we're all talking about these ideals and this vision for a way of life that isn't all about consuming things. And that's why I think going to Bhutan is so interesting and important, because you can see a place at a moment in time and maybe help break down the barriers, the misunderstandings, and the Hollywood world that they see, the outside world, to be.
Boy, everything I need is right here within me, and I want to go to Bhutan more than ever. Lisa Napoli, thank you so much for sharing your experience in this fascinating Shangri-La of the Himalayas. Best wishes.
Thank you so much.
You can watch videos of Lisa Napoli's Bhutan adventures and find links to most of our guests in the details to this week's radio show at ricksteves.com. A World Away from Bhutan is another relatively small nation with a reputation for being content. Sweden is tidy, tucked away, secular, highly taxed, and okay with it because of their strong social ethic. Swedish tour guide Åsa Danielsson is not shy about her pride in her country's accomplishments. And she joins us right now to talk about the Swedish version of the good life. Åsa, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
How do Europeans look at Sweden from a stereotype point of view? And how is Sweden that way or not that way?
Well, if you ask any European, they would probably say, oh, Swedes are tall, blonde, and quite shy.
Really?
Probably.
Shy?
Yes, shy. And everything is orderly and neat.
Yeah, it's very orderly and neat. You had these futuristic suburbs that people would go to see, and people would live just like little records in a jukebox.
Yes, exactly.
But shy. So, Sweden's got in the old days, Sweden was the Swedish pornography. I mean, it was the opposite of shy.
So it has some contradiction. Exactly. We have that side too.
Where
so
did that come from, by the way? Because I don't feel like Sweden deserves that reputation today.
Mm. Well, basically, you can say that in the 60s, the sexual liberation was very strong in Sweden. Since Sweden is a very secular country,
right?
I just think that there's a very relaxed attitude to everything that has to do with
personal morality and so on.
Not necessarily morality. That's important. Mm-hmm. Swedes, and that's a very common misunderstanding. If you talk to people in the south of Europe, they would see that people that is
sexually free, so to speak,
that would be immoral. But that's not the case. People are extremely immoral. It's actually, according to some statistics, Swedish people are very faithful. It's very common not to be married, but you're still faithful.
Now, that's a very good distinction. So people in Southern Europe might be heading up to Sweden thinking people are loose and promiscuous, whereas they have less taboos, but they have that loyalty and that faithfulness.
Yes, and honesty is a very, very important concept in all of Scandinavia, but also in Sweden. So honesty and responsibility, I think.
In the countryside, it's not uncommon to find little businesses running on the honor system. People have their potatoes or their berries out, and it's just there's a jar there, and people take some. There's even some public laws that say you can only catch as many fish as you can use, but it's up to your judgment, and everybody sort of works together. That's that Scandinavian social ethic, I think.
Yes, to see always the bigger picture, to see that, you know, not look at yourself, just
you've got to live together in a community.
Exactly.
Well, that's very typically Scandinavian and I suppose typically Swedish. Now, statistically, I think Swedes are the least church-going, among the most socialistic, and the most affluent, and also most content.
Yes.
What do you make of that?
It has to do with the fact that we try to see the bigger picture. We live in a society where we trust each other.
So people are happy and they are helping each other. They're paying more taxes.
Yes.
They don't go to church much.
No.
But I believe there's a kind of a humanism. It's sort of a religion in disguise.
Very much a humanism. And as I said, responsibility and the sense of that you are one in a bigger society, that kind of links together to, you know, the sense of community is not something that is uniquely something that has to do with religion.
I know, because
we have that.
I was just saying there's a lot of Christ-like qualities to Scandinavian social ethic.
Yes, definitely.
And the irony is Scandinavia is the least church-going and least married part of Europe.
Yes, definitely. I even have Muslim friends living in Sweden that say that a lot of Swedes are better Muslims than the Muslims themselves.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could say that from a Christian
point
of view, too, because, you know, love your neighbor and all of this sort of thing. And you find that Swedes are, you know, as far as social safety net and so on, taking care of their neighbors. Yeah. Also, it's an interesting situation in Sweden because it's one of the lowest poverty rates anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's very relatively high taxation
and
a very progressive government when it comes to family values. Talk about parental leave. If a family is having a baby, what kind of vacation do they get?
Well, you get, all in all, 18 months of paid parental leave that you have to share between the two parents.
So you said parental rather than maternal.
Yes. We changed that as the first country in the world in 1974.
Really? Bravo, 1974.
Yes, a long time ago, Swedish men were the first one offered the possibility to actually stay home and take care of their children and getting paid. So 18 months, 9 months for the mother, and then 9 months for the father. So usually you can actually, be a little bit flexible between them. But, okay.
But it's use it or lose it.
Yes.
If you don't take it, you don't get the paid time.
No,
I mean,
exactly.
You have to take the paid time to get it.
Oh, yes, definitely.
So you have this concept of latte dads.
Yes, you can see walking around in Stockholm, you can see daddies with the strollers, with the babies, and they're, sitting in the cafes and drinking latte and having a great time with their friends.
Now, from my perspective, it's just like, where do you get the money to do this? Now, Norway can do it because they have all the oil from their oil fields in the sea.
Yeah.
But how can Sweden be so wealthy to provide this way for its people?
Mm. We're a country of big industries. We have Volvo, we have Saab, the cars,
right.
We have IKEA, we have IKEA, as you see here, H&M.
Ericsson
mobile phones.
Those are big companies in a relatively small country. What is your population?
9.5 million.
So less than 10 million.
Yes.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about Sweden with a Swedish tour guide friend of ours, Åsa Danielsson. Also, when we're talking about Swedish culture, how does it compare in your mind to Norwegian and Danish? Because many of us put Scandinavia in the same basket. How are the cultures distinct?
Mm. I used to describe the Scandinavian countries as siblings, all part of the same family, but with distinct qualities. So Sweden, with its historical, we were one of the big empires in Northern Europe. So we are the big brother or the big sister, definitely, to Finland, which was a part of Sweden
because
for 600 years.
Because a big part of Finland speaks Swedish.
Yes, well, it's
or
a
has.
Minority, but yes, they were part of Sweden, literally, for 600 years. And then also Norway was in union with Sweden for about 100 years. Denmark, however, they have always been the kind of the other.
So there's a more strong rivalry between Denmark
yes.
and Sweden.
Yes, and Norway was literally shipped between Denmark and Sweden.
That's interesting. So Danes and Swedes dominate.
Yes.
And in order to really be strong, they would want Norway in their camp.
Yes.
And the Norwegians have been shuttled back and forth. And it was interesting. You told me the other day you do some tours in South America.
Yes.
And you take Norwegians on your Swedish tours, but not Danes because Norwegians and Swedes can understand the language easier.
Yes, much, much better, yes.
So you don't have to do two languages. You give it in Swedish,
yes.
And your Norwegians can understand fine, but a Dane would not.
No, exactly. And a Norwegian understands me perfectly because they have always looked towards Sweden when it comes to culture life. They have watched Swedish TV.
That's
so
right.
They know much more about Swedish culture than we Swedes know about Norwegian culture. Although, that is changing. That is changing. The interesting thing is now because what happened with Norway... Norway found oil in the 60s. So Norway is now is our little brother, who's now becoming very, very wealthy.
A little bolder.
And now what happens is that because of the oil, they have so many job opportunities in Norway.
Uh-huh.
So young Swedes that cannot find a job in Sweden, they go to Norway to work. So if you go into a restaurant, 95% of the time, or maybe 90%, you will be served by a Swede.
In Norway?
In Norway, yes.
I didn't realize that.
Yes. Because they also have much higher salaries and everything. So
Norway's got it pretty good right now,
yes,
I think.
Yes,
yeah.
They do. So it's a new kind of dimension, new interesting relationship.
When Scandinavians joke about each other, I mean,
I
know in the British Isles, the Scots and the Welsh and the English and the Irish are always fun but insulting each other.
Yes.
How do Swedes, Danes, and Norwegians joke about each other?
Well, Swedes and Norwegians joke about each other. We have Norway jokes and they have Sweden jokes.
Tell me a Norway joke.
Okay. Why does a Norwegian have a sandpaper when they go out in the desert?
I don't know.
Well, you need a map.
Oh, that's fair. I love that. But I'm Norwegian.
What
would a Norwegian say about a Swede? Tell me
What would a Swede use? It's the same jokes. You just switch
you
the
flip
Norway.
It off.
Yes,
okay, so
yes,
what would
that's
a,
the
what
funny
would a,
thing.
Why would a Swede take sandpaper to the Sahara Desert? So he has a map.
Exactly.
All right. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're joking about Scandinavians. We're talking with Åsa Danielsson. And Åsa, each country has a king, I believe, don't they? In Sweden,
yes.
Denmark, and
not in Denmark, a queen.
A queen, okay, but a royal family.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What's new with the Swedish royal family, and what power does it have?
It has no power at all, politically wise. No power at all. Our king is the king in the world with the least power, I would say.
And probably that's why he's accepted.
Yes, it wouldn't work otherwise. So his role is just being the official head of Sweden, the promoter, the ambassador of Sweden,
okay. Representing.
But he doesn't even vote.
But the royal family in Sweden does take tax dollars away or tax crowns away from the economy. Is it a good investment?
I would say it would pay approximately $2 a year per person.
For the royal family?
Yes, for the royal family. So,
and is it worth $2 a year?
I think so, especially our crown princess. She's great. She is down to earth. She's
this is
funny. We're talking about Crown Princess Victoria.
Because there was a wedding a couple years ago, wasn't
there? Yes, where she married her beloved personal trainer.
Oh.
So he's now our newest addition to the royal family. He's now Prince Daniel.
So the princess's trainer became now he's married into the royal family.
Exactly.
And how did that go over with the Swedes?
Great. That's another difference. We are less royalistic than the Danes and the Norwegians,
okay.
I would say.
So this probably bolstered the standing of the royal family among the Swedish people to have the trainer marrying into the royal family.
Yes.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been discussing modern Swedish culture with Åsa Danielsson. Åsa, as a tour guide, what's your greatest joy in sharing Sweden with foreign visitors?
My greatest joy is showing a different lifestyle, a different way of enjoying nature, enjoying being outdoors, a different way of organizing life, very much equality. Between men and women in our lives.
Well, it sounds like you're a little bit evangelical then about Swedish values and a way of embracing life.
See, even being religious, we're the same.
Yeah, so tell me, what is it? Why do you believe Swedish life is worth sharing? What is it about Sweden that you think the world would be a better place if everybody had that? Go ahead, brag.
Oh, gosh. Okay, that's very un-Swedish to brag.
Okay, but you got permission. You're in America.
No, but I do think that we have arranged our society in a way that I think is really, it gives people a possibility to thrive, to develop as human beings, to live a good life.
And the big government would not, and many Americans would say such a big government would demoralize the individualism of the people.
No, we are very individualistic. One of the key things in Swedish culture is independence.
It's true.
So it's actually in order to be more independent, everyone is given the same possibility so everyone can really develop as an individual. That's the kind of key concept. And I know it's quite difficult to understand, so that's why you just have to come over and we'll explain it to you and you can see it with your own eyes.
Also, if you could sum up Swedish social ethics in one phrase. In Swedish, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I Sverige så är vi alla individer, men vi lever tillsammans.
And what was that in English?
In Sweden, we are all individuals, but we live together.
And then to say thank you very much, what do you say?
Tack så mycket.
Tack så mycket.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick and Isaac Kaplan-Wolner at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington. Thanks to our colleagues at NPR in Washington and Marketplace in Los Angeles for their help today. We get website help from Andrew Wakeling and Kate Mulhern-Graham, and our theme music is by Jerry Frank. We'll look for you again next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.
Travel with Rick Steves is made possible in part by the European Union delegation to the USA. Tips about traveling in Europe and information about the EU are available at euintheus.org.